I've got a really interesting expert with me today. What do you think you would know about aesthetic careers if you talked to 10,000 people about their hopes and dreams in the field of aesthetics? So on this episode, we're going to unpack many of the things that he's learned about medics trying to venture out into the world of aesthetics to help you accelerate your journey. Because if there's one thing I've learned over the years is that although it often feels like your battles are just yours, they're actually really similar across the board. We all go through different stages, hit similar obstacles, sometimes with different names, but they're basically the same thing. Mindset, training, and the right steps to take in order to advance your career. And Jay is going to help us do that a lot faster with his wealth of experience. So welcome, Jay.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me today.
We've worked together for years now, and I always love listening to what you have to say about the people that you've been talking to on the phone, because, and there's something I've also learned through my own experiences, there's no replacing experience. So when you've had 10,000 interactions with someone, with a group of people, you understand the patterns that other people don't see. And that's what I'm excited to kind of get from you today. If we can start with that one, what do you think, when someone calls up and asks for advice on training and what to do and how to develop their careers, what do you think the most common situation is that they're in at that point in their lives?
I speak to people from all different backgrounds, from all different medical professions. People are in different stages of their journey. Some people are really interested or intrigued about aesthetics. So some people I speak to who are at the beginning of the journey, never injected in the face before, and they're really intrigued or interested about what this venture can lead to. Other people I speak to, they'll have done their job for 5 years, 10 years. They're a little bit sick of the day-to-day monotony of doing the same thing day in, day out. So it just really depends on each individual. So I speak to individuals, like I said, from all different medical backgrounds. It's my job to then have a comprehensive consultation with those individuals to really get to the bottom of what it is that's making them want to do this. Some people it may just be a passing interest, and they just wanted a bit more information on what this can lead to. Other people really want a way out and potentially look at a new vocation to commit all their kind of time and effort and full endeavors towards.
I remember when I first started, looked into training, my trigger was being in a job where I could not negotiate my annual leave at all. Basically, I thought I was going to work in hospital my whole career, and I had various other financial reasons, because they do this weird thing with, in the UK, with banding on doctors' jobs. So you apply for a job, you think it's going to be on like whatever, 30 grand a year, and then you find out your job too isn't banded and you're actually on 21 grand.
Yeah.
But you bought a house on 31. so now you have to figure out how you're going to basically make a bit more income. That's why that was one of the triggers. But the real thing that really tipped me into it more was the lack of autonomy. So I remember working in accident emergency, trying to get back to South Africa for the first time since I emigrated, and really desperate to go. And I just could not negotiate the leave. They just wouldn't. Eventually I did it by swapping. Like, I got two other people to swap and I swapped with them, but it was so annoying. And I thinking I was going to be the only one in my family not to go back for the first time, that I thought I need something where I can have a bit more autonomy. And then my friend told me about aesthetics and I was like, I'm going for that. So I would say it was from a position of pain, but then later on discovering that I really enjoyed it as well. So it wasn't actually the first trigger. I think some people might benefit from hearing that, because if you haven't fallen in love with it, but you're interested, it, you know, sometimes that comes later as well. Yeah. Do you find most people are they motivated towards something, or are they trying to move away from something?
I think there's a combination, to be honest. Quite often I'll speak to people and they will have, as well as obviously working as a doctor or a dentist or a nurse or whatever medical profession it may be, they'll obviously have to juggle their family life, their children, any extracurricular activities, hobbies. And quite like yourself, they've just not had the luxury of time. So they'll have to try and juggle everything. And like you quite rightly said, they don't have any control over things like annual leave or when they can finish or when they can't finish, missing really important moments of life, watching the kids go to school, grow up, recitals and everything else, really. The beauty about aesthetics, it really does give you the autonomy to pick and choose the hours, because ultimately you're investing time and effort and finances in yourself, in essentially a business. So like I said, by doing so, you do have the opportunity to take a lot more control over your life and that work-life balance. So quite often I'll speak to people who are young mums, for example, and they just don't have that flexibility because they'll work for the NHS or whoever it may be. More often than not, I speak to NHS employees. They'll have X amount of time off after maternity leave, and then they'll know they have to go back to it. Not everybody can afford to take a 2, 3, 4 year, how many of a year gap to kind of spend and enjoy that precious time with their children. So they'll have to kind of be forced to go back. Whereas with aesthetics, you can work around everything like that. So if you have young children and you're struggling with time, then the beauty about it is you do have that flexibility and autonomy and the ability to pick and choose when you do that. Whereas that just isn't possible when in employed work.
I have a great story about that. Actually, one of our earliest trainees, and I always, you obviously, as we've trained more and more people, it's harder to remember them all. But Sarah Murphy, who trained with me, one of the earliest trainees, and she set up a clinic called Anti-Aging Aesthetics. And I always remember her because she was so heavily pregnant on her first training day. And I remember thinking, because we had a 1-year-old at that point, and we were in that breaking point of like, gosh, this is hard. Yeah. thinking, that's going to be really hard work for her to build a practice while she's having kids and all that stuff. And lo and behold, she's done so well. She's got a thriving practice, you know, loads of 5-star reviews and employs loads of staff. She's doing so well. And it just goes, I always like that story because I think what I like about it is that she overcame what my objections were. Like, she overcame what I thought was a difficult situation and just absolutely nailed it. And it made me think differently about what's possible. And there's so many cases like that. And it's actually largely, I'd say, was like 80% female nurses. Mm-hmm. And they go out and do things that I don't think maybe even they themselves think are possible when they first start. Yeah. And that was my experience as well. I remember my goal at the beginning, and I'd like to hear what people say their goals are. I'm always interested in people's goals. But my goal at the beginning was to work a little bit on Saturdays and Sundays and supplement my income. Mm-hmm. And now it's my whole life. So you never know. But how many people do you think have clear goals about what they want to achieve, or are clear to you, you know, on the phone about whether they really want a career or whether they just want some sort of side hustle?
Mm-hmm. Honestly, it's actually a very small percentage who will have actually a set goal in mind. I kind of take it upon myself to ask a series of questions to get a comprehensive understanding of what it is they want to do. Quite often people get in touch and they'll say, Jay, tell me a little bit about the courses, or sometimes they'll even get in touch and say, oh, I want to do X, Y, and Z course. And then I take it upon myself to ask a series of questions to try and get to their ultimate goal. And then that will allow me to then carve out a bit of a path for them to go down to help them achieve that. Sometimes when asking them questions, I think they realize that actually what they thought they initially wanted to do isn't actually the case. And just highlighting that quite often gives them a little bit of a different perspective. And then even sometimes it allows them to kind of go back to the drawing board and think, rethink what it is they actually want from this. Just like you touched upon before, just to briefly kind of mention, ultimately, even one of the clinicians over at Skin Viva Training Academy, Sharon Middleton, for example, I remember when she newly joined us, she actually was still in the NHS. And although we all love the NHS, sadly, we know the absolute dedication, the hard work, the blood, sweat and tears that our NHS doctors and nurses and everybody else involved are putting in, sadly, they're just not rewarded as they should be. And quite often I will speak to clinicians, and they will quite often, I'll ask them what it is, why they're wanting to do it, and they'll tell me it's because of time or autonomy. And then they'll kind of dance a little bit around the fact that it's to make a little bit of extra money. And I always say to everybody, please don't ever feel ashamed or embarrassed about wanting to make a good living for yourself, because firstly, it's not going to be easy. You're going to have to put in a hell of a lot of work to actually become not only a good injector, but more importantly, a safe injector, and obviously build up that clientele base. But in addition to that, it takes a lot of hard work, and you've already done half the work by becoming a medical professional. Now this is a new journey that you're about to embark on. So just going back to Sharon, she, like I said, was working in her own clinic. She worked for ourselves in the clinic and the training academy. In addition to that, she was still working for the NHS and just felt really burnt out. And I remember actually discussing with her around in the kitchen and just saying, Sharon, you're absolutely amazing injector. I think really by devoting more time to doing what you love, it will allow you to really fulfill the needs that you're looking for that you're not really getting from your NHS role. And I remember a few weeks after that, speaking to her, she told me she packed in a day job, and she absolutely lives by aesthetics now, absolutely loves every moment that she does. Is one of our most advanced trainers that we have available at our academy, as well as in the clinic. So it's great to see that this particular vocation has given her the opportunity to pick and choose what it is she wants to do and devote more time and effort in something that she actually loves, as opposed to doing something where she may not be getting the financial reimbursement that she actually deserves from the NHS. So like I said, touching upon again on the NHS, we do quite often get a lot of people who are putting in 110% and just not getting anything close to what they could achieve financially by doing aesthetics.
Yeah, I always think of the there's this human needs list, and we basically all humans have the same needs. We meet the needs in different ways, but I think that healthcare is full of people who basically want to heal other people. They want the delight of seeing someone feel better. You know, it's that six-year-old girl who wants to put the plaster on her mum's knee or her sister's knee to play a role in them getting better. And then to get the credit for that as well. So to a little bit of kudos, you know, being respected for your job, having connection with patients, feeling like you're contributing something that matters, and then also having your financial needs met because you do an important job. That's basically what being a medic was supposed to be, but because of the nature of we're in a difficult situation with an aging population and not training enough people, and there's not enough money in our healthcare system, so that all gets shunted further and further down the list until you're basically firefighting. You're unimportant in your role because you don't feel like you can change anything. Everyone's short of resources, often in teams in the NHS. Stress teams don't always treat each other nicely, so you have this, a lot of nurses complain about kind of bullying and all that kind of stuff that happens in the NHS, plus you're not getting compensated for the effort and the time and the night shift and all that stuff. And I think it's really important that people understand that you're not necessarily doing a disservice to the NHS by saying I've got something better to do, because that will make the NHS have to think more about how they fund it and how many staff they have. And and also, I mean, I still work in the NHS one day a week, but I do it on my terms. And I think that's one of the great things about aesthetics, is you can start to, like Sharon did for so long, you can do both for a while if you want to, and then you can move in. And I found that a much easier transition than just resigning all of a sudden. So, but I also want people to feel legitimate if in their unhappiness, because it's normal to feel a bit pissed off with your job when it wasn't what you pictured it being. And you know, it's just not meeting your needs, and these are just needs, they're not negotiable things, they're not likes. You have to have them or you're not going to be happy. So to go after that is 100% legitimate and a good thing to do for everyone, because we need productive, happy people in society, not crushed people who are about to go on the sick for 6 months because their job is so awful. So anyway, that's my little rant about going after your happiness and not letting other people, because a lot of people have friction over their identity and whether this is like vanity. We can maybe talk about that later as well, rather than something that's actually contributing to people's health and well-being, which I believe it is when you do it properly.
Yeah, I'm just going to touch upon like my initial thoughts on aesthetics now. I remember when I actually was contacted by the recruitment consultant about this role as working for SkinViva, and I didn't know anything about aesthetics. My initial kind of perception of this industry was just a bunch of vain people who absolutely love themselves, and that was kind of the long and short of it. Only until I actually started working for the organisation and got a good insight into aesthetics, and even after discussing with yourself, actually came to the realization that I believe 95% of it is all kind of to do with the mental side of things and the psychological side of things. There's always a reason why somebody wants to come to you to have something done. It might be the case they've just, I don't know, come out of a 20-year marriage, they're in their mid-40s, early 50s, they're not feeling confident, they're not feeling sexy, they want that little bit of a tweak just to build that confidence again. Like I said, that's all psychological as opposed to just the physical side of things. And I think being trained to such a standard where you're able to offer a comprehensive consultation, whereby you're able to kind of really dig deep into that person's mind and get a really thorough understanding of why they're sat in front of you, and then doing the right thing for that individual and providing the best kind of treatment plan for them. Quite often nowadays, nowadays you'll see, sadly, some clinicians will happily over-inject or overfill people due to the monetary side of things. However, I feel the way we train over at Skin Viva Training Academy is to, again, do the right thing for the customer. Sadly, we live in a world in 2024 where body dysmorphia is a real thing, and hundreds of thousands of influencers, models, actors who have this kind of ideal, they create this ideal picture of what the perfect human looks like, and sadly not even they look like that. A lot of people nowadays want to look exactly like that, but they won't really grasp the fact that it's all edited or airbrushed or whatever it may be. And like I said, the beauty about us as a training provider is we only inject if we feel it's the right thing, and we're happy to turn people away. And that's the kind of ethos that we want to instill in our delegates, is to make sure that you're doing the right thing for the patient, and not just look at kind of the dollar bills in front of you, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. It's that's one of the shifts I had to go through in my journey as well, which is when I first started stepping into this arena, my introduction to it was basically a very superficial training academy where like no one's face moved, and everyone, I was 27 at the time, and I remember them telling me on that day, like the leader, no consultation, said you need to treat your eyes because you've got wrinkles when you smile. I was 27. I still never had my eyes treated, but I remember thinking like that really did not feel nice. Yeah. Am I supposed to be like that with my patients, where I just walk and look at their face and criticize something and then charge them to fix it? Mm-hmm. And I remember I called Miranda on that the lunch break on that course, and I said, I don't think I want to be involved in this industry, because it seems to be that you have to make people feel worse and then charge them money to make them feel like how they felt before they met you. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I want to be involved in that. Now, obviously I am involved in the industry, but that was the starting point of me defining myself differently to how many people present medical aesthetics. And it really, all I'm doing is using the medical model as opposed to some beauty first model, and making sure that you actually make people happier. It's not rocket science. Yeah. But it is something that I think it's useful for those idealistic people who always wanted to be a doctor or a nurse and wanted to care for people, that you can bring that with you. Don't have to leave it behind. That's actually the best way to do it, because those people, I've got some great stories that fit with this as well, but you know, those people build really solid practices because the relationships are so strong. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing that might help people understand aesthetics, is it's about relationships. So when you are affecting your appearance, you are doing something that enables you to feel confident when you try and connect with other humans. And it also allows other humans to better connect with you, because you look like a strong, confident person. And that is, unfortunately or fortunately, just the way it is, how people judge you. Is it, do you look like the kind of person who I can trust, who feels safe to talk to? Or do you look cross with me the whole time? Or pay attention, those guys, those of you listening, next time you're lost and you want to ask someone directions, why do some people get picked more than others? You know, it's a lot of social cues. And who looks threatening, or who looks welcoming, who looks, you know, available to talk, and who looks competent, like they know the area, whatever it is. It's a load of basically prejudice, but that's how humans work. And it allows, when I talk to patients, I find what they're after is the ability to connect with other people. And when you understand that, you realize it's not vanity at all. This mm-hmm. is survival and connection, and something we all need.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, I remember when I newly joined the business and having a pretty in-depth conversation with yourself. And I still use that same model till this day about getting a comprehensive understanding of the individual. Because like I said, that really helps me guide them. And like I said, quite often it will be the case that I'll speak to individuals and they won't even know themselves what they want. Or they'll think they want one thing, but really it's something else. Or they've been told they need something. And quite often I'll speak to some delegates, for example, and they'll tell me about speaking to Joe Bloggs Training Academy. And the Training Academy has tried to guide them down their kind of their most high ticket value item, or whatever that may be. And sadly, there is quite a lot of scaremongering going on in the industry, saying, oh, this regulation is going to come into place. Where, as it stands in kind of January 2024, it's just at consultation stage. There isn't anything confirmed. However, like I said, sadly, people are being scaremongered. There's people using phrases like future-proof your career and things like that, when really nothing has been confirmed. And people quite often ask me whether our training will be future-proofed or will count in the future. And sadly, I have to be open and honest with them and just tell them I can't tell you, because I can't tell them something that doesn't actually exist. And the last thing I would ever do is say to them, yes, it is, and then tomorrow the government come out and say the legislation is going to be X, Y, and Z when it's really A, B, and C. So I always endeavour to be as open as open and honest as possible with everybody regarding kind of where the industry is going. Anything, we always try and keep kind of abreast with any updates and everything like that. We're actually fortunate enough to train delegates from literally all over the globe. As you know, we've trained people from America, Australia, Italy, Brazil, India, all over Africa, just to name a few places, which I personally feel is a testament to the level of training that we offer here at the Academy, and just shows that people are willing to travel literally across the globe to train with us at our Academy because of the caliber of training that we offer.
The other thing I think is interesting about that is basically the regulation has been coming, that's how it's been spoken about, since I started in aesthetics.
Yeah, yeah, and same with me. I remember when I started back in 2018, one of the first people I spoke to was kind of really heavily discussing about level 7 and was saying, oh yeah, it's coming into place. And I was like, all right, okay, well, I guess I need to know a lot more about this level 7. Obviously read up about it. And literally, I don't think it's inched forward even slightly since then. Like I said, there's always been ongoing talk about regulations or particular programs. But like I said, nothing's actually come since then. But sorry, you're about to say about your...
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just been on the cards for as long as I've been in the system. And it's there's always one consultation after the next. And I really want there to be regulation.
Yeah.
Because it just makes sense for patients. I mean, regardless of what you think, professional backgrounds, which is a whole other topic, just the fact that if you're bad at what you do, you can't be stopped currently is not a good thing. Yeah. So we definitely need some regulation, and I wish they would do it sooner as possible. But the current state of it, as far as I'm aware, is they've just done another consultation, and it looks the same as other consultations I've filled in, which is you basically, everyone with an agenda writes what they think the new system should be, mm-hmm. and they try to piece an argument towards it. So, you know, the BACN will say, we think only doctors and nurses should inject, and then the British Dental Council will, or someone in that field will campaign for the dentists, and I'm sure the beauty therapists are writing their version of what they think it should be. And then someone's going to have to assess all of that and come up with some suggestion that, unfortunately for most people in the system, it usually seems to be some sort of compromise that doesn't ruin all the tax dollars that they're getting. Now, I've only heard this from the inside, but from someone who's involved in very earlier reports, that the amount of VAT they get from medical aesthetics is actually a considerable driver for how they regulate it. Mm-hmm. Now, this is just hearsay, and I might be completely wrong on it, mm-hmm. but it does make sense that they're not going to just suddenly cut it off and kill the industry.
Yeah.
So I would say that whatever happens, it's not going to be done. It's very unlikely to be done in such a way that everyone's suddenly excluded and there's like one injector in London who did everything right who can do it.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be, yeah, there'll be some hoops to jump through, but it's not going to be the end of your career if you there will still be new people coming into the industry. I don't think they're going to kill the industry with some sort of really hard. In fact, it's more likely to be the other way. I think unfortunately, most medics will be not very happy with how it's regulated because it will just be a little bit more free. Hmm. I think the best case scenario is that you'll have to have non-medics working under the guidance of medical injectors in the future. But who knows? They may just talk about it for another 10 years.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's so many people out there who are involved in it. There's just, like you quite rightly mentioned, there's going to be, everybody's going to be kind of fighting their corner, and nobody's going to take it laying down. There's too many people making a heck of a lot of money out there to just fold so quickly. So I think I agree. I don't think the regulations will be anything as detailed as everyone is thinking. But it's crazy because, because we train people from all over the world, when quite often they get in contact, one of the first questions we ask is kind of what their background is. Some of them are quite surprised. When we even ask kind of if it's like an email conversation, when we ask what they're, if they're a medical professional, because for them, quite often they'll kind of reply as in, of course I'm a doctor or a dentist or whatever it may be, but they don't know how unregulated it is in the UK, sadly. So hopefully, like you quite rightly said, there will be some regulations in place that will make it a safer environment for everyone. But like I said, it's yet to be seen. But I think the thing that I love about our training academy is safety is of paramount importance. So we feel not only do we train you to become a great injector, but more importantly than anything is to become a safe injector first. And not only are you protecting the patient by doing so, you're also protecting yourself and your registration that you've worked so hard to get. So you've gone through, obviously, your nursing school or your dental school or medicine or whatever it is you've done. You've jumped through so many hoops, did all that education and worked so hard to get that registration. I think it's imperative to obviously maintain that regardless of whether you're wanting to do aesthetics full-time and packing your day job as a doctor or a nurse or whatever, or if you do want to kind of jump between the two.
So on that note, actually, what do you think at the point where you're trying to offer guidance to people, what do you think their biggest fears are about going into this industry?
I think like most things in life, I think it's the fear of the unknown. So people quite often get in touch and because I'd say 90% plus are NHS employees, they will have done their job as a doctor or a nurse or a physio or a pharmacist for the love of the role. So it'll be the real kind of intrinsic factors. So quite often, unlike in other countries, I'm going to use America as an example, if somebody gets ill, it might sound harsh me saying this, but the doctor's not seeing dollar signs in their eyes because they know they're going to get paid X, Y, and Z for said treatment. They just know that they need to do a good job with whatever they have available because it's on the NHS. So quite often, they won't have the business acumen at that stage. I'm not saying they won't kind of learn that at that particular stage. They'll know how to do a good job in what they do, but they won't know how to monetize essentially a new skill set. So quite often, I'm always open and honest with them, and I do say to them that the easy bit is the training. That's the easy bit, doing the theory, doing the practical sessions. The hard bit is actually going out there and stepping out of your comfort zone. Because, like I said, it's brand new to them. It's a new industry. It's essentially doing something that they've never done before. They not only now are an employee, but now they're the boss, they're the cleaner, they're the driver, they're the person who orders the stock, the person who injects the filler, toxins, whatever it may be, polynucleotides. So they're literally playing a 360 role. It's all become holistic to them. So like I said, they're not just somebody who goes into a building, does a job and then goes home. They're literally doing everything. If they're training, for example, if a model doesn't turn up, they've got to make the phone calls unless they've built up a team, which obviously doesn't come straight off the bat. So quite often, like I said, initially they'll come to us and it'll be the fear of the unknown about how to actually set things up and everything like that. And I think one of the beautiful things about the Aesthetics Mastery Program that we offer here at our training academy is the fact that it not only is limited to the practical element of the training. One of the big things is we also go over aspects of the business element of it all. And what I love about it is that you actually share your own experiences, which really allows them to kind of step into your shoes and hopefully follow your guidance. Now, it might be the case somebody's aspirations may be just to do a bit of Botox, a bit of bread and butter stuff, bit of Botox, bit of fillers here and there, and that's totally fine. Other people may want to work for a prestigious clinic or training academy, train other people up, have an in-depth knowledge of aesthetics. And then we get people right at the other end of the scale who literally want world domination, and that's fine as well because we can accommodate for that. If it is the case that somebody wants to get a good understanding of the technical ability of how to do it, the psychological understanding of how to do consultations, the business side of things, then and also things like the science of things, then the mastery program kind of is an all-encompassing option which covers everything to do with that. Not only, like I said, does it cover the practical elements, you get online live interactive sessions, you get online e-learning, live sessions with yourself once every month. And one of the biggest things that I get feedback on as being one of the biggest positives is access to the peer-to-peer WhatsApp group, which is obviously headed by yourself. So people, when they've done the easy bit, which is the training, and they're out there in the big wild world all alone, it really offers that kind of safety blanket for delegates for things like particular case studies that they may struggle with, or even just really, really basic stuff like the first time they're about to do upper face Botox, they'll do marking up, and just with the permission of the patient, of course, they can just post it in the group and get feedback from yourself or other peers on the program about how that's gone. And the beauty about it is everybody has kind of been in their footsteps, so they appreciate kind of that feeling at that stage in where they are in the journey. So it's a beautiful network. It's a beautiful kind of safe place. It's almost like it sounds a bit cliche, but like a family feeling.
I do actually call them fam.
Yeah. So it is like a really, really good network of that we've created over the last kind of four and a half years now.
I'll tell you what is happening. I don't know if you've noticed this. What I love about that group is, firstly, they are people who really resonate with the values that you've already shared. So we do get a really good cohort. And that also fits in with the kind of stuff that they're happy to share. So I'm literally learning stuff from them now, some of them. So I got an amazing business tip from Sarah. I don't know if she would want me to put her whole name on it. I'm about to give her business tip away. But she told me about what she'd done with kind of packaging various things together and creating plans. And her way of doing it, like she basically just demonstrated with a tip that she shared on one of our many mastery calls. She's actually shared it a number of times now, how she basically makes nearly all her profit from that system. Okay. And how she can basically get new patients to start off with the normal stuff, and then they get trust with her. They see the value of a package, slot into that, and she doesn't even have to market herself because people are on. So she does do her Facebook and Instagram marketing, but she's basically built a self-sustaining business with these packages, and she shared all of that with the group. And this is stuff that I haven't done successfully yet. That is amazing, like super powerful stuff. Someone else I remember also over lockdown, how she transitioned into doing some marketing and teaching and talking about skincare quality, and she basically transformed her business. She shared all of that with our group. Obviously, we have all the case studies where you actually get, we go over treatment designs, patient psychology, and the right approach to each one of them, and then we get the result back. So you're kind of learning collectively. And they're such a great bunch. So I really appreciate all of them, and I think we just keep attracting people who fit in really well with that. But it's a wealth of knowledge. I really enjoy that myself, to be honest.
Yeah, and I'm sure you'll notice yourself. You'll see as people start to progress, they'll become more integrated into the discussions and things like that, which for me personally is a beautiful thing to see, because I kind of feel like a very small kind of cog within the building of that individual success, which selfishly, like I said, for me feels like that for me feels like a little bit of a success story, that I've assisted this individual in getting to what it is they want to do. But yeah, like I said, it's great to see people, once they have built a bit more experience, getting more involved in discussions and assisting others. And it's kind of like, obviously, the longer people have been onto it, the more experience they've got, they then start sharing that with the newer delegates. And we, like I said, we attract people from all over the world on the program. I think we've got maybe like half a dozen from Australia. We've got, I think, three or four from the United States, a couple from the Caribbean. Again, half a dozen, I think, from Europe as well. So it's beautiful as well to see kind of what's the different trends going on in different parts of the world as well. Because it could mean that something might be really popular in America that might be potentially coming over here, or vice versa. Mm-hmm. So it is great to see, like I said, the differences.
Something I find really interesting is actually the similarities. Like, you know, you were talking about the Caribbean story, and I know that injector really well. She's absolutely killing it. Like, she's number one in the Caribbean now. And so she's built this position, this brand, but she also goes through all the same old struggles, and you know, people who've been in the industry longer criticizing her and trying to pull her down. And then she's at least got the support network where we can say, look, this is normal. That happened to me too. You know, you never grow anything without annoying someone along the way. Yeah. And just hearing that, it makes it easier for her to manage and keep going. And one day, when my kids are a bit older, we should do a world tour, go around and visit all.
Definitely.
Places.
You have to pack me in your suitcase for that one. So.
In terms of, so as you've seen people progress, what do you think are the appropriate training to speed up the process? Because I think one of the troubles I had when I first started was I basically copied someone else, booked in with a training provider who was offering to teach me all sorts of things on a day. Like, and I was keen. I was like, oh, well, if I can do lips and cheeks and nasal labial fold and chin all on one day, why not? Yeah. So I went off and I did that. And I on the actual day, I ended up watching quite a few procedures. I injected one nasolabial fold And then it was like, here's your certificate, off you go. I remember thinking, I'm really not ready. And I complained, and they ignored multiple things. And eventually they had another training day in Manchester and said, okay, come along. And I was lucky on that day that there was like, they didn't have as many delegates. So I actually got to do a few more procedures, but I had to fight for that. And yeah. And even after that, I wanted to do more stuff because it's just, there's a lot to learn. And the training, even basically it was like a half day theory and then a day of like treating three or four people. And it was terrible anyway. And I remember feeling completely lost. And essentially it nearly ended there for me because I didn't yet have the threshold of thinking I could do it. Yeah, you have to just peek your head over the top and thinking, you know what, I'm confident to do that. Yeah. And if you don't reach that, then you don't get beyond that. So I'm interested in, have you experienced something similar with people? And what is it that you suggest they do to get over those hurdles? Yeah.
So quite often I speak to individuals and they would have trained with certain training providers. Now, there's quite a number of training providers out there who kind of I don't know whether specialize is the right word, but offer crash courses. So thereby what they'll do is you can sign up to a 3-day course or a weekend course or maybe even a little bit longer, and what they promise to do within that time frame is essentially make you a master clinician. So obviously we're all human at the end of the day. There's only so much your brain will be able to absorb over that period of time. And then how much of that you actually retain will be even less. So although it might look more attractive by saying, yeah, we'll train you up on everything over a period of 3 or 4 days and we'll charge you $3,000 or $4,000 for that, really all you actually do is you're just overwhelming yourself and bombarding yourself with too much info, which often is just then leading to information overload and you actually learning less, if that makes sense. So
I think the statistic I heard is you forget 90% within 30 days, something like that. Yeah. So if you do a 3-day course, by the end of the month, you've done less than a 1-day course.
And that's quite evident because people go one of two ways from that after that experience. First way is people saying, you know what, I had a rubbish experience, it's not for me. Sadly, it might be the ideal vocation for them. However, because of that bad experience, they've just decided to throw in the towel and not take it any further. The other half will actually do something about it. They'll recognize that it's not them that's the issue, it's the poor training that they've had that's the issue. They'll then sort to look for a reputable training provider. Now, some of these training providers, to be honest, they're fairly big names in the industry. But like I said, the training or the method that they're training in isn't suited to everybody. Don't get me wrong, there will be the odd few people who will find the crash course a good manner in which to learn. However, the vast majority of us, it's not the way we train is more kind of bite-sized chunks just to make it a little bit more digestible.
That I get a lot of feedback via my social media network that the way I explain a video has got so much more. Basically, a lot of injectors are just taught there's a fold, inject
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And there isn't the reasoning and that's the what if you do this and what if you do that.
100% agree with that. So just touching back on kind of the second lot of people who will have that first time bad experience. Firstly, they'll identify it, and secondly, they'll do something about it. And I think those people really are those who will be successful within the industry. Because like I said, firstly, they've recognized it, and then secondly, they're actually doing something about it as opposed to just throwing in the towel. And at that point, I'll have a discussion and they'll tell me what they feel competent with and what they don't feel competent with. And then we'll kind of carve out a bit of a pathway to try and get to them to a stage which will help them achieve whatever their aspirations may be. The Mastery Program is designed in such a way where it has an amalgamation of 11 training days. Two of which are observational days, two are exclusive mentorship days with yourself, of course, and then the other are practical training days, essentially covering the full face. So,
and then we have the Zoom mentorship as well, basically continuous mentorship on the WhatsApp group.
That's
as well.
Correct, yeah. So over the 18-month period of the program, we have, in addition to the practical sessions, we have all the live interactive sessions, the Zoom sessions with yourself, which take place once every month, in addition to obviously the online e-learning suite as well. which is very comprehensive. They've got some great learning in there for the kind of foundational learning, for complications, which I'm sure at one point, if it isn't still the case, was one of our biggest sellers. Is that still the case, Tim?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's very, very detailed e-learning that's included as part of that program. So just going back to, like I said, the two ways in which people will recognize that they've not had the training to the standard that they've not only wanted, but more importantly, needed. So they will do something about it. That's where I kind of have that consultation with the individual and look at where we can go from there. Quite often it will be the case that they will be happy with what they've trained in and then build upon that, and some of that will mean that they will redo quite a bit of the training that they've already done. Or sometimes people will come to us and just start again from the beginning and try and come to us as like a canvas for us to kind of embed them in the Skinviva ethos. And we're happy to help people at either stage, whether they want to continue on from the journey or they want to start afresh, where we can accommodate either way.
Mm-hmm. Something I'm really passionate about is that they don't just become, you know, I call my greatest fear is that they'll have all the information but no transformation. Mm-hmm. So I really push hard to get them, particularly in the mastery program, to take the steps that require the movement, because it's very easy to keep learning and not do anything.
Yeah.
So that encouragement to say, right, what are your blockers? What is stopping you? How can we unstick that? And then what's your next step? And then actually seeing them do it is amazing. Like we've had, just so many people build businesses and do it in different ways as well. So I know one of my mentees has developed his own product, which I'm really excited. Hopefully I'll help him launch it. But it's a fantastic, I don't want to say too much about it, but it's a fantastic thing to have in an emergency that takes away several steps. So I'm hoping we'll be able to launch that once he's finished fully developing it. We have Bethany, who's just started her own podcast on off the back of conversations we've been having. I'm giving them content tips as well on how to produce like content that goes straight into the minds of the viewer, rather than, you know, a lot of people do the hi, I'm so and so, and it's kind of slow, but I'm teaching them what I'm learning on social media on that group as well, and then they go out and do it, which is also really rewarding for me. I love seeing people, implementers I call them, so the person who can actually put the ideas into action. Those people always do really well. And that's a big part of the ethos of the coaching side of it.
Yeah. And I think being a part of that community that we've created for the Mastery Program, I think it's all almost like when you go to the gym with your workout buddy, there's always somebody there to give you that extra push. Because I know whenever I go and I'm on my own, I quite often I'll get to a certain rep and I think, do you know what, yeah, I'm done. Whereas if you've got someone there who's going to give you that push, you're always able to squeeze that extra rep or two out. And I think that when you're at that real kind of tension point, that's where you make the difference, is that extra that last or second to last extra repetition that you give it. I think that's the real difference maker.
We had a great example of that on the New Year's one. So after every in the New Year, I usually do a goal setting coaching session, and one of the people who's been on the program for more the longest arrived and said, first thing is, I'm feeling rather uninspired this year, so I've come to see if I'll get inspired. And by the end of it, she's buzzing and she's been off creating content again, which is also great to see. But it's that basically everyone is sharing their struggles, which validates that it's normal to have a bit of struggle, but then they're also sharing their solutions and the stuff that's worked for them. And because it's people just like you, it means something different. I'm already aware that, you know, if I tell some story about something I've overcome, people think, oh, that's all right for you because you're Dr. Tim. They don't realize I wasn't. Like, I used to just be any other struggling person to get started. But when you see your colleagues do it at the same level and you see them all ratchet themselves up, it is really inspirational. You believe you realize the barriers are in your own mind.
Yeah.
And it allows you to move forward.
Yeah, I think as well, quite often people will think just that people have different personality types, and quite often people will feel a little bit shy or a little bit introverted. And I know certain professions who are in their personal life introverted, but when it comes to being in front of a camera, they just turn into a different person. And I understand that can be so daunting. And even me doing this video podcast with yourself, it's the first ever time I've done it. So I remember even thinking like, oh my God, how are we actually going to do this? But honestly, it's something where I think those who step out of the comfort zone are really rewarded for it. But it's one of those, I think like most things in life, you get out what you put in. And that's definitely the case with aesthetics. And I'm sure many of your followers follow Miranda as well. And she's really big. And she, if any of you guys follow her, you'll know that she's really big on stepping out of your comfort zone and kind of taking that leap of faith within yourself and your ability. And yeah, you might do a video and it might not look great. And it might be the case that you hate the sound of your own voice, as I feel I do. But without trying, you'll never know. And like in most things in life, there's always going to be trial and error, and you'll try things and it won't work, but you won't know if it doesn't work if you never try. So you've really got to take the first few steps to get the ball in motion. And like I said, if it doesn't work, it's not the end of the world. There's going to be hundreds of thousands of other people out there who are doing similar things. And trust me, if they don't like your video, they'll scroll past it. If they like it, they'll stay. Obviously, hopefully build up that profile for you.
Yeah, we talk a lot about it. I would say the two biggest blockers I see, complications, which is why we cover it a lot on the training, to empower people to not worry about. Because actually, if you do all the right things, I'm pretty sure you can get through a whole career without necrotic injury. That's the one people worry about. And so that's a framework that I teach on the program, is that you make sure your vascular occlusions are infrequent by doing all the steps we teach. If you're going to get one, make sure it's small. And if you are going to... if you get one, you diagnose it immediately, you treat it immediately, and you treat it comprehensively. And if you do all of those things with a reversible product, the chance of you ending up with a wound is very, 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 very small. But you have to go through that motion. And it's similar with social media, which is people have a similar set of fears, but it's that I might die on social media rather than...
Yeah.
And actually, you can break down all of those into steps too and realize that it actually doesn't happen. Like the chances of you doing anything other than just slowly getting a little bit of traction is quite low. You're very unlikely to go viral and get a load of haters. But similarly, probably not going to go viral initially with your content and get a ton of clients, but you're going to become the kind of person who can talk to people on video, and that's the foundation of a good marketing plan. You know, you can look back at my whole journey. I talk about this quite a lot. I was terrible on video, nervous as hell, and just gradually got slightly better every few weeks until it's no longer a big thing.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, even looking back at some of the videos, I went on our YouTube page and I saw some of your videos from, I think they must have been about 7-8 years old, maybe even longer. I mean, you look at absolutely identical, but without the beard, of course. But yeah, honestly, you can see an immense amount of difference between even just your body language, the way you speak. The content is still very high level, but I just think it comes across a lot more natural as opposed to how it looked back then. You looked a little bit deer in headlights situation.
Yeah.
But now, obviously, you seem to have a considerably better flow to it all. And I'm sure, hopefully, we may do a lot more of these. My videos might come out a little bit better a few years down the line, but who knows?
You started at a much higher level than I did, so... We'll see. But yeah, and that's a key thing also that we try and help people overcome it. And there is only one tip for it, which is you just have to make content. Because I once paid like a stupid amount of money for training. Uh-huh. And it was a complete waste of time. Because I went back and made the same videos trying to move my hands differently, but I felt just as awkward. Because the real problem is the voice in your head. Yeah. Thinking, am I doing it right? What do they think? And the only thing that's happened that's different than me is I no longer have that voice. I just talk. Yeah. And that only happens through practice and experience. And yeah, I'm always encouraging people, just make 10 crap videos, publish them all, no one will watch them anyway, and then you'll find it's less scary to make your next 10 and they'll get better just as long as you're paying attention.
Yeah. There's different approaches that people take as well. Some people want to go for the comedic route and things like that. And honestly, some of them do really well. And there's particular like delegates who we've trained in the past who I'll follow their kind of professional social media page, and quite often, like, I find their videos absolutely hilarious. And I think I checked one of them the other day. I think she had somewhere in the region of like 10,500 followers. And I don't remember it being anywhere near that. But like I said, she's taking the more kind of funny route to it. But she's obviously doing really well with what she does. So like I said, that might be your forte. You might be somebody who's funny and use that to your strengths. You might be somebody who's more of an educational approach. I think there's like there's a TikToker, like one specific doctor. I think he's got like, I don't know, 3-4 million followers. And he just gives like really good snippets of advice, which are like backed up by science. He does a bit of myth busting. Because you know, on places like TikTok, Instagram, there'll be people who will like tell you, I don't know, if you rub egg in your hair or something random like that with I don't know, oranges or something, you'll get a full head of hair, where he'll start kind of myth-busting that. So I don't know, you might want to go down that approach. There's so many different approaches. You don't have to like be some all-knowing, all-seeing God or anything like that. It just depends on where you feel your strengths are, and just go with your strengths, and whatever you feel your weaknesses are, then maybe not go with them. It might even be the case you might be totally not up for video, so you might be a great voiceover or something like that. So like I said, just try and think, what are your strengths, what are you getting the best feedback for? And then that might help.
This is one of the things we cover, I know, on the business section of the Mastery Program, is the different ways, because we're known on social media, but actually Skinviva is actually built more on SEO and word of mouth until we started the e-learning side of my personal brand. But basically, we've got that type of training built in. Like, what is it? What do you need to do in order to get your business moving in that direction, as well as the social media stuff? Everyone talks a lot about social media, but you are correct. I think it's a very small minority. I think there's a lot of people who think they aren't good at social media who are just scared. Mm-hmm. And if they were just themselves, like I always say to someone, if I just filmed you now, it would be a good piece of content. It's only that when the camera comes out, you stop communicating like yourself. Yeah. But yeah, there's loads of ways of building a business, and you can do it your own way. And that's something I met an injector in America who said the only reason he's doing aesthetics is because he heard me say on a previous podcast that you can do it your own way. And I think that's really important. You can build the shape of business that you want. You can work the hours that you want. You can do the procedures that you want. You can choose the clients that you want. You can choose the prices and the income that you want to a degree as well. Like, I know there's some limitation with affordability, but if you provide a high-end service, you can get higher-end prices. If you want to be convenient and close to people and do home visits, you can do that if you want. But the exciting thing is you just need to ask for the thing that you want and start to build that, and get some guidance on the way from someone who's experienced. You know, a mentor for me would have saved me at least 5 years, because I was lost for half of it, figuring it out through trial and error. That's one of the things I think I basically do for people now, is give them more structure and shape, and you do that as well from the moment they first call. So,
what do you feel you enjoy most about the Aesthetics Mastery Program?
I love seeing people make progress. For me, progress is like a drug. So if I have someone who's stuck and I coach them, like I haven't got my website going, and I explored with her why she didn't have her website going, and it was because she was actually afraid of getting clients. And then when I unbottled why she was afraid of getting any more clients, it was just the common story of, what if I get a vascular occlusion? So then I was able to focus more on unpacking that fear, decreasing that fear, and then giving her, going back to the website and saying, what are the steps, shrinking those steps down. And then the next week she booked in, she had a website. She also wanted business cards, that was part of it, and I made her the deal, because she was a model on one of the training days, that she can't have a treatment unless she'd done her business cards. So she brought her business cards for me the next time we met. So she had a business card and website, and she was on her way. And now she's got another, she's actually started a little business with one of the other mastery students. Oh, so she's working in her practice, and she's on her way, you know. And I just love seeing people on their way. I mean, Sarah Murphy might be sick of me talking about her, but it's so cool to remember so clearly someone who only had a dream, and then to see them living that dream probably better than she thought it was going to be. Yeah. Because I don't think she wanted something as grand as she's produced when she started, but she's done it, you know. And I feel like I get to take a little bit of a lot of pleasure from that. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Okay, great.
Jay, I'm interested if you can look back at the people that we know who've been successful.
Yeah.
And the ones who haven't. Like, what do you think was the defining characteristic of those people?
I think the biggest thing is having a genuine passion and desire for aesthetics. Quite often I'll speak to people and they'll say they want to do this or they want to do that. But I think the real difference between those who say it and those who do it are the ones who are willing to put in the hard work. Because although it can be a very lucrative industry to be in, and it gives you benefits like the autonomy of controlling your work-life balance, the hours that you do, like you touched upon, ultimately even kind of the financial goals that you wish to achieve, it does take a shed load of hard work. There'll be times where you may not get an inquiry for a couple of weeks. You will have invested, obviously, financially in this, depending on where you're coming from, again, that's going to be another financial expense as well. But really, those who are successful with it and are on the program are those who have that real kind of that fire in their belly and want to commit to a good proportion of their working life doing this. The majority of the people on the program will ultimately have goals of doing aesthetics on a full-time basis, with quite a number of people also wanting to do aesthetics a majority of the time, but also keep their foot in the door with their job as a GP or a dentist or a nurse or a midwife or whatever it is they may do.
I see in them there's a type who are hedging their bets and they're thinking, oh, I can do a little bit of everything and maybe do a little bit of aesthetics on the side. It doesn't really matter if it takes off or not. And then there's another type who are really decisive. You know, the decisive means to cut, like they've cut off the other options and they are all in. Mm-hmm. Those people always do well.
Yeah.
Because they actually haven't left any other option for themselves. It's a really interesting part of human motivation is the point where you become really committed versus keeping it as one of many options.
Yeah.
And for me, that's the psychological difference. That's way bigger than the other differences you might think. Like I remember thinking, oh, well, you know, maybe it's easier if you're a doctor or if you're a young female because you appeal to the younger. And it's none of those things. It's the people who are 100% committed will always find a way. Yeah. And it's a lot like that. Basically, that fits more with the mastery student versus the day course program is that they're all in by virtue of what they've declared by committing to that program. I think it's one of the key things. And if I was to look back at my own career, there was a point where I was in two camps, like should I or shouldn't I? And the business grew very slowly and I was doing other things half the time. And then there was a decisive point where Miranda gave up her job to back me that changed everything. And that was our moment of commitment. And she had no other option. So that's what drove our first wave of success, yeah.
I think as well, if you do have any shadow of that, and one thing I would never advise to anybody is to pack in your day job until you ideally either adamant that this is what you want to do, but in addition to that as well, have at least built up your clientele base that is big enough to supplement or even equal your current income. I would never say packing your day job until you've kind of got to that level and then kind of build upon that, because anything else I think is potentially a big risk. But then again, at the same time saying that, I mean, obviously Miranda's taken that risk and believed in you firmly enough to actually commit to aesthetics full time.
We hedged our bets. I worked full time as a GP. She worked full time backing me up, creating patients I'd see in the evening. We had no children. So I would work till 9-10 o'clock at night after GP. It was extremely hard work, but we took a pay cut because we didn't take any money out of the business for 3 years. Yeah. So it was, but you know, well worth it. But it was, we did hedge our bets. We had the element of commitment, but we also knew we could survive without the money.
Yeah.
And that's a good place to be.
Yeah.
It's a little bit tricky if you need the money to live and you're not, the money's not coming in, it's too stressful. So I agree with you, like some sort of middle ground where you know your basics are taken care of. A little drop of standard living is probably to be normal at the beginning, but you don't have to worry about food, you know. And then you can go and put more and more time in.
Yeah, I quite often say to delegates as well, like, forget the whole 40 hours, 35 hours a week, whatever you're doing, you're going to be expected to do considerably more than that. And again, if you feel that you're not willing to put in that work, then don't even waste your time or your money or your effort, because this does take a lot of hard work. So those 40-hour weeks there, you can wave them goodbye, because you will be doing evenings, you will be working outside of your 40-hour shift. If you do night shifts, then you'll be working in the mornings. If you work on weekdays, you'll be doing weekends or vice versa. That will easily go up to 50, 60 hours a week to build up that clientele base. You've got to spin those plates, but that then will be able to, you'll be able to maybe reduce your hours in your day job as whatever it is you do, and maybe increase the hours in aesthetics until you get to a stage where you are able to financially meet your goals doing a set number of hours. And that might even be, you might be able to achieve that goal by doing 20 hours. So then you've got essentially the rest of the time's all yours and you pick and choose what you want to do. Quite often I find people are time poor, and by doing something like this, it does give them the flexibility and the luxury to pick and choose what they do with their time, because some people will value time over anything, and I totally respect that, and I think I'm one of those people. But like I said, by doing this, it does definitely allow you to pick and choose what it is you do, and at the same time it can be very well paid if you're not only doing it correctly, but like I mentioned earlier, doing it safely as well.
I think particularly if you look at it in comparison with like a standard nursing job, like there are many nurses I know who are more than double what they'd be getting. And but obviously they've built that up over time. It's not instant.
Yeah.
But it's the other thing I will say, just as you were talking about the working the long hours, it feels really different working those hours when you're building something that's yours. Mm-hmm. I remember feeling, wow, it's really cool that I'm working, it's 11 o'clock at night, but I don't mind because it's my thing. Yeah. Whereas when you're working 11 o'clock at night, night after night in the NHS or whatever, you feel like you're just holding it together because they won't fund it properly. Yeah. You're not really getting anything other than just feeling like you're doing your best. Yeah. But it's miserable and it's stressful. So it feels different when it's your own thing.
Yeah. And quite often what I hear as well is certain roles in particular, like, I don't know, if you're like an A&E nurse, for example, working Friday, Saturday night, we all know it's not the best place in the world to be. And quite often they'll get patients who come in inebriated, or they're coming in not in the best conditions, can quite often be not only verbally but also physically abusive, and they're getting paid for no end. I don't think anyone can get paid enough to be physically or verbally abused, but they're definitely not getting paid nowhere near enough that they should be just to even do the job, let alone all the abuse to take as well. And what I quite often hear is they'll just say to me, Jay, I just want someone to appreciate what I do, and kind of I want to see the nice side of things. And even when speaking to some of my colleagues who train at Skinview Training Academy, and they tell me of times when they've kind of done treatments and things like that, and the patient has just kind of broke out in tears the first time they've looked in the mirror after having whatever filler treatment it is they've had. It's just a feeling that you can't really get. And when you compare that to the abuse that you get in certain roles, it just kind of begs the question, why have I been doing this for so long? Why haven't I thought about this earlier?
I certainly find aesthetic patients nice people to deal with. I thought they'd be vain and wanting to sue me and all that stuff, but they're just regular people who want to do a few things to make themselves feel better, and they appreciate it.
So Tim, tell me a little bit about the challenges that you come across when mentoring the delegates on the mastery program.
So because it has this much broader goal, it's not just about where you stick the needle, it's about how you build an aesthetic practice. The challenges are enormous, and they cross from everything from my husband doesn't support this business to I've got a patient who's got a bruise, or who I've failed to deliver a result with, or I don't even know where to inject. I'm terrified of social media marketing. Basically, all the limitations get touched. I think the hardest ones would be when someone is, it's actually getting people to let go of their current thing. So a lot of people want something a lot, but they can't let go of anything else. So I'm quite often trying to help them develop a strategy of how to get a little bit more time and focus on the aesthetics. And then the next one I think is pretty high on the list would be, it's the communication with patients. So this actually might put this as number one. This is probably the most important one, most important complication with aesthetics, is that unlike any other job role that you have, the feedback is immediate and in your face, literally. And so you don't get any leeway. Like if you're a junior doctor learning how to work on the wards and I prescribe like some ACE inhibitor for someone's high blood pressure, if it doesn't work, it's not my fault. It's the drug company's fault, or it's their genetics or whatever. And I don't even find out for a month. So it's quite low stress making little changes, finding out later that something went wrong, but it's not your fault. Whereas if you imagine a blood pressure tablet had to be injected at exactly the right angle, at exactly the right plane, exactly the right amount on each individual patient, and you'd find out immediately whether you'd done it correctly or not. Imagine how much more stressful it would be prescribing blood pressure medication. And that's what is the hardest thing with aesthetics, is you have to go out there, communicate with your patients, agree a plan, and then deliver that plan, and then they instantly judge you. So it's helping people through that cycle, and a huge portion of it is the communication side. Like, how do you communicate in such a way as to keep expectations reasonable but not lose their trust, so they still allow you to do the procedure? And how do you make decisions that put you in a low risk position at the end of it? So let's do 0.5 mil and see what the result is like, rather than doing the 5 mils that they saw on Instagram. You and the patient trust each other more. You progress around talking around what their expectations are, what your expectations are, and then you get the validation from them that you're making good progress in a controlled way. So that's a brief summary of a lot of processes that actually guide the whole aesthetic process. Consultation, from injection technique to patient assessment, consultation, complications, it's all that one cycle. So we basically go around that cycle in mentorship evenings multiple times, depending on which cases have come to us. But that's the biggest challenge, is getting people to confidently handle that whole process, which has got the tightest feedback loop, short of being a surgeon who actually has to, you know, you've either removed the appendix or not. Like, it's extremely tight and they judge you on it immediately. So that's the hardest bit to get through.
So we launched the mastery program back in the end of 2019. Obviously, there was a bit of a turbulence time between them, as we all know, during COVID and all the rest of it. So it's coming up to nearly about 4.5 years now since we had the program. What made you set up the mastery program?
So it's been about 4 or 5 years now, isn't it, since we started? And around about that time, I was learning a lot about basically how to structure an offer for your clientele better. And what most businesses do, and I teach this also in the Mastery Program, is that you copy your competitors. Mm-hmm. You think, oh, they're doing it. They must know something I don't. I'll do the same thing as them, and hopefully that will work. Mm-hmm. But there's a whole different way of designing a business, which is much more interesting and fun, which is you actually ask people and you figure out what is it that they actually need to get the outcome that they want. Because they actually don't want they don't want the training. What they want is a new life with a practice and autonomy and all those things. And most training does not deliver what people want. Yeah. So, you know, you can do a qualification in medical aesthetics and great, you've got a certificate. Does that mean you have a business and autonomy and know how to employ staff and know how to do all the procedures? It actually doesn't. All it means is someone stood over your shoulder and said, yeah, you know enough to inject safely. But that's not the same thing as the thing you're actually dreaming about. So I start, and everyone should do this with your whatever business you set up. You should really spend some time thinking, what is it that they're actually after? What is their dream? Not how can I sell them a training course? And once you know what their dream is, you can design a product that actually will increase the likelihood of attaining that outcome. And when I started from that position, I realized it couldn't just be training course after training course. It needed the mentorship element. It needed the community element. It needed the structure so that you get all the injections. And it needed the continuous feeding in of new information through a system rather than, and recording of the best information rather than, you know, have a training day and then good luck. Like, it needs that, the background support, the mentorship, and the overall structure that in the right order trains you to do the right thing. Because this is another thing, is I wasted huge amounts of time doing things in the wrong order or doing the wrong thing. You know, and people do this all the time. I've met clinicians £50,000 in debt who haven't seen a patient yet because they are too busy copying other people, but they haven't actually done the sequence right. They're not seeing patients and treating patients and getting money and then doing more training. They're just doing more training and more training and more training. That's how it all kind of came together, is what is the perfect product that if you were really serious about going into medical aesthetics, you could jump onto that and ride that train until you get your dream outcome. And that's basically what the Mastery Program is designed to do.
Yeah. So would you say it's a holistic approach to aesthetics, where it encompasses kind of everything required to essentially get to that ultimate goal of being a master clinician?
Yeah, because it has to be holistic, because to get your dream outcome of being a master clinician, you also need to learn a little bit about business. You need to learn a little bit about the psychology of personal development. You need to learn from your colleagues. It's much more complicated than just the clinical. And the biggest mistake that new clinicians made, and I do the same thing, is you think the barrier to entry is knowing where to stick the needle. And that is only the start of it. Once you need to do that, you've got to figure out all the other stuff. And so the Mastery Program is a holistic answer to let's create a program that actually gives the result people want, a successful practice rather than just another certificate that hangs on the wall. So I know we've made some changes to the Mastery Program this year to improve it. Tell us a little bit about what you think is going to make it easier for people.
Yeah, so the Mastery Program is what we'd like to think as the kind of pinnacle of aesthetic training available anywhere in the world of aesthetics. Saying that, it's definitely not for everybody. We've taken that feedback on, and we know that not everybody's going to be at a stage where they wanted to sign up to the Mastery Program. In 2024, you're actually going to see a variation of the Mastery Program. So we're going to be splitting it into 3 component parts. So what that will allow people to do is allow it to match with their budget, their journey, their aspirations. So they're not having to kind of be all in if that's not where they're at that present moment in time, but ultimately break it down into segments, but ultimately complete it if they complete all 3 segments.
So this is a way of getting a smaller amount of commitment at the start. You're still all in, but you're all in 3 chunks instead of one big chunk.
That's exactly right. And like I said, that does go hand in hand with what that individual's aspirations are, where they are in the journey, the financial commitment that they want to start off with. So just gives them more flexibility, and that's come from feedback from speaking to delegates.
So if you're interested in joining a training program that will help you with all aspects of setting up your own aesthetic clinic and help you achieve your dreams, then the Mastery Program is designed exactly to do that. It's not just a clinical training program, but of course that's the heart of it, with 11 different courses that you'll do that will teach you how to inject. But we also have all the backup and support it requires to actually help you through the setup process of actually owning an aesthetic practice. There's a lot more to it than just the injections. We need to know about the business, marketing, setting up systems and processes so that you can actually run a thriving clinic. So if you want to learn a lot more about that, you can call and ask Jay if you're suitable. So Jay will guide you through the process of making sure the Mastery Program is the right step for you, or he'll recommend something else that's smaller. And don't forget, he can actually design the program around where you are in your current training. So some people repeat training, others like will feel very confident in one aspect and they can just focus on different aspects, which does make it more affordable as well as being better honed to your exact needs. So if you're interested in training with me on the Mastery Program, check out the description below.